everyone. Thanks for joining me in this episode of What's Your Story, where we have conversations with storytellers who've made a powerful impact on pop culture and have truly inspirational stories to share with us. Today, I have with me Priyaranjan Kumar, who's released his debut novel, Tales of Sales. He has nearly two decades of experience in the corporate world across multinationals, conglomerates, and startups in diverse sectors of FMCG, retail, e-commerce, and private equity. He's worked extensively on the ground with his work life taking him to 32 states and union territories of Bharat. He believes in the power of stories, as everyone in the world has an interesting story to narrate about their work, life, emotions, and experiences. Indeed, Priyaranjan, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mayani, for having me on the show and looking forward to the session with you.
Great. Okay, so first, Priyaranjan, tell me a little bit about your book. What inspired you to write about your experiences?
So I think the idea germinated during the lockdown of COVID. You know, so everybody had suddenly had a lot of time. I suddenly had a lot of time. I didn't know what to do. And so during that time, just to get over that kind of morose environment which all of us were in, I started to pen down some anecdotes from the business world on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. And those anecdotes were quite liked by people. So I got a lot of warm reactions and reception from what I had penned down. So one day I just as a part of those writings, I just put out one incident which happened with me when I was working with Mars Chocolates, and it's one of the chapters in the book about how I set up the distribution, sales and distribution for Mars Chocolate in one of the clusters around Delhi NCR. And it was a short, very, very short incident. And, you know, somehow it became, viral in its sense that a lot of people did call me and messaged me. And I thought that, wow, this is making sense. And so, you know, that idea of writing a book germinated from that point, that why not I make it, you know, bigger? Why just limit it to one story, one incident? But then obviously the thought was that I am not a conventional writer. How would I, writing a 300 word story is very different from writing a novel or book. You know, what will be the sequence? What will be the logical flow? So I think when I looked at all the options, you know, what struck me was, I know, why not make it a story? Why not make it 15 stories, you know, about what I've seen, and this is firsthand and this is relatable. And I'm sure you've read the book in parts, and you would understand that, you know, it is coming from somebody who, I think the genuinity of what is written will come out very, very clearly, because you'll be able to relate to it. And there's nothing very, very fictional about what has been written. So I think that's where I wrote the first chapter, and then I recollected, you know, it took me 6 months to write this. I recollected each of my stints, highlights, and what it did teach me. So I think very very succinctly written about 15 attributes which I have, you know, weaved my stories around, and that's how it culminated into. It has taken me 6 months to write it, but it is about two decades of life learnings which has been poured into these 100 odd pages in the book.
You know what I really liked about your book was that usually when we take like a book about business or something in the field of business, sometimes the knowledge is very dense, the material is dense. The other time it's a lot of people from academia writing those books, so it tends to get very boring. Whereas you've written about your experiences, like when you read the book, you understand these are very relatable. So, you know, I love that about your book. So can you share some of the most memorable or eye-opening experiences that you've had while working in sales and marketing?
I think it's often said that, you know, the toughest experiences teach you the most in life. And I can say now that I was lucky that, you know, I had probably the toughest test of my career, of my life in the first few years that I was working. And again, it's one of the core chapters, second chapter in the book, when it's talking about transparency. You know, when I narrate a story about how I joined United Breweries, and I was working in one of the northern states of India called Haryana, where there is a Thekedari system, or you know, auctioning system, which runs back to the independence era, and the kind of people who are doing this business are not normal business people. You know, these are goons, and because the trade operates in such a manner, because liquor trade is associated with something with a lot of underhand dealings. So I was just about 3 years in my career, and you know, I was exposed to this very, very harsh reality on the other side of life, which probably people never experience, you know, coming out from business schools, etc. They're not exposed to this. Most of the people are not exposed to this. So I think that was one hell of a ride for 15 months, where I dreaded each day of, you know, what I was doing, what I was going through. But when I came out of it, then I realized, you know, that the pearls of wisdom, the kind of things which I learned in those 15 months, probably no other stint would have taught me. So it taught me the art of negotiation. You know, how do you negotiate, standing, keeping yourself, your position as of primary importance. What you say in a negotiation, because a lot of times people leave things, you know, in a vacuum. So I learned this, that you never ever leave things in vacuum. You have to have a closure. A very, very firm, full stop, you know, closure to whatever you are talking and discussing. Don't leave the other person with an element of a doubt, so that they can make up things as to, you know, that this could be the intent of the, you know, of the conversation. So never, never, ever do that. And so the two basic things which I really learned, which have, you know, really helped me throughout my life, is the art of negotiation and the art of clarity of conversation. So these two things, which has really helped me in, you know, making my career from there. And possibly once I had that kind of a stint, I had that confidence in myself and my ability that you place me in Sudan also, I will survive. So, you know, didn't matter to me after that, because I'd seen the worst of it. But everything which came later, you know, would have to be better than what I saw. So I think this was the best part of my stint, very formative years I had. That I'm lucky, I can say it now, not then, but I can say it now, that I was lucky that I was exposed to this at that point in time.
Right. Like you've titled it as transparency. Like I would say, like, this is your training through hell. So you can only come out at the other end. You know, now, like, I wanted to ask you, how do you handle with the pressure and the stress that comes with working, you know, in a high pressure corporate environment where you have targets to hit? How do you deal with it? What advice would you give to people who's probably dealing with the same situation?
I think my advice would sound a little textbookish, but you know, this is what has helped me in handling my work life, the kind of pressures, the kind of stress which I have encountered. You know, I just focus a hell lot on inputs, and sometimes, you know, what happens is you get into an argumentative mode with some people who are very output oriented. So my principle of life is very, very simple, that if you've got to become fitter or lose weight, first of all, in life, you'll have to admit that you're overweight, right? Yeah. The first thing is admitting that there's a problem. And right. If you don't admit that there's a problem, you'll never be able to diagnose the problem, rectify the problem. You know, so, and that is where the stress develops, that once you are only focusing on the output, you don't know what the problem is. You're not even admitted that there's a problem. So you don't know what inputs to be applied, you know, to get the desired output. A lot of us in a corporate world, and it happens at managerial level, there is extreme focus on results. And I'm not saying that focusing on results is a bad thing. Obviously, you are running towards objective. But then in running towards the objective, if you really fail in, you know, doing the basics right, you know, at the end of the day, running a business is not very complex, right? We are not making rockets. There's no high technological stuff that we are building which will require a lot of brains, etc. Ultimately, it's all common sense. It's about human beings. It's about how you interact with them, how you tell them with simplicity, clarity, what to do, how good are your basics, how good are your inputs, how good is your product, how good is your service, and how well you are executing your plans on the ground. Ultimately, anybody who executes the plan on the ground most of the times people end up getting the results. So my advice, you know, to everybody who, you know, comes across to me is that, you know, just focus on input, spend time on the ground, spend time with people whom you are with, right? If you are at the highest levels of management, if you're not interacting with your teams very often, and you're not even open to what people are saying, because you're miles away from the end consumer. The person who's closest to the consumer, you've got to listen to them. Right? It's like, you know, in olden days, when there were kings, there used to be a sentry at the outpost. If you don't listen to the sentry at the outpost, then there's an imminent danger. You know, the danger will be at your doorstep, and then you'll not be able to react. Right? So the people on the ground are like those sentries. So keep listening to them, because they're the closest to the consumer. Keep listening to them. Keep improving your inputs. You'll get your output. So most of the times, I've been lucky that things have worked out for me. And I have relatively handled this kind of pressure with this mantra.
Right. So this is your coping mechanism. Like, keep your ears to the ground, listen carefully, and accept like whatever feedback that you're getting from the ground. And because then you work your way up.
Correct. Absolutely. So that's the reason why if you've read the book completely, you'll understand there's a common thread of relationships of people. You know, that's very, very strong. Of how keeping the ears on the ground. So every chapter, every attribute, every story that I narrate, it's about on the ground. It is never something which is prescriptive in nature and which is something which is in air, but it's something which has happened, which is on the ground.
Yeah, and that was my next question that I wanted to ask you, because the common vein that runs throughout your book is the importance of relationships. You know, that kind of like contributes to the success. But I want to ask you on a very personal note, how do you maintain relationships with people who are extremely difficult or who makes you want to like jump off a cliff? You know, like extremely difficult personalities that you just can't stand. When you see that person's face in that office, you want to like run away. How do you deal with those kind of relationships? And I want to ask you in two ways. One, if you're a manager and you have this very difficult person reporting to you, the other, that you have a peer on your level who is difficult to work with, but the collaboration between you is very important for us to achieve the results. So what do we do?
So first the manager, you know, so there are two sets of people, you know, whom you can't choose in this world. One is your parents, siblings, and one is your boss, right? So they are God given to you. So you can't choose them. So which means is you have to accept. Just like you accept your parents, just like you accept your siblings the way they are. If you always, you know, have this this thing in your mind that, you know, this is not my choice or this is not my place where, you know, I would like to work under this person, I'd like to work, if a guy or the lady is very, very difficult, you'll always have a problem. But if you have a mindset that, okay, now this is a God-given reality, you can't change your parents, you can't change your sibling, you can't change your boss. Now, this is what it is. Now, you've got to make do with what you have. So that inherent possibility is there in every human being. Because we have dealt with very difficult situations as when you were teenagers, you found your parents to be too tough to handle. And maybe you have the same kind of thing going with your siblings. So there is an innate quality in all of us to handle a very, very tough situation, tough manager, right? Because that's what we have been exposed to through a childhood. The only thing is that we have two different personas, while in professional life and personal life. But if you can bring that up from your personal life to your professional life, I think you'll be able to handle it, because everybody's handled it in their lifetime. Now, the second thing is that being a peer, you know, again, so that's where after a point of time, after you spent a lot of time in the industry with a lot of people, you'll understand the importance of maturity. You know, so while at initial stages, I also had this problem and I was not able to deal with a lot of on a peer group, what it would end up being all conversation, one-to-one conversation getting stopped, then all email conversations start where 500 people are marked in CC, so that, you know, everybody is the reading as to what is happening between two people. But then I realized as time went on and I became a little more senior in organizations that I'm working, that maturity, you know, changes a lot of people, and it did change me. So it is absolutely fine to back away from situations. It's absolutely fine to avoid confrontations. It is of paramount importance to have a conversation on data and logic and refrain from having an emotional discussion. A lot of times what happens is we get into an emotional discussion with a difficult person, and you know that already the person is difficult, and you're not having a data-based or facts-based discussion, you're having something which you're going on your emotion and feeling and gut. You're obviously land up being in a very difficult time with that person. So the two sets of people that I advise working with, one is that bring out your personal life into your professional life when you're handling a very tough manager. And when you have a very tough peer group, then you have to at least have built that maturity and have fact, database, logic discussions and keep away emotions aside. Most of the times you will be able to get through these situations.
Okay, so I want to address the first part of that answer that you gave, where you said bring the personal into your professional when you're dealing with a difficult manager. And you said you have to accept that person, just like how we don't choose our... But then what happens is, what happens after we accept? What if, you know, you're passed over for a promotion or this manager plays favorites in the team? And then what do you do? How can you accept that situation and still continue to do your best in that organization? In that situation, do you recommend that you very actively look outside and leave? Or do you think, what do you suggest? What do you advise to all the young, you know, listeners who's listening to this?
See, I think one should make all conscious and all possible efforts from your side, you know, to adapt, adjust, etc. Because again, this is a situation that you can't change. But then if you really feel that the point to look out, I think, starts when you feel that you're not growing in your job in terms of any new knowledge or understanding. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If you are getting bypassed for promotions, I'm still okay as long as I'm learning something new.
Right.
Right. The moment you think or you start feeling that there is stagnancy in my learning,
yeah,
then possibly there is no point in continuing. Because, you know, you're not going to get any other role, any other responsibility to enhance your learning. And you have reached, you have hit the glass ceiling now from your learning agility and learning point of view. Can't learn anything more and you have had enough from that job. I think then it's best to get out of the situation so that your learning does never stop, should not ever stop. You know, whatever role that you get into, whatever job you get into, your learning should never stop. So I think it should be common. It should be dependent upon the environment that you are placed in. And I think, let's face it, you know, just like life is, you will never have a situation where always you will find the bestest of people who are managing you. You will never find a situation where everything is absolutely transparent and unbiased and fair. And people do call it, right, that life is not fair. I mean, so is any job, and it's not fair. So, but you just learn how to deal with it. So you've got to deal with it. The only point is, look out when you feel that you're not growing from a learning aspect. Okay, everything else can come. Everything else can come. Money, etc., promotions, etc., will come sooner or later. But learning, the time that you lose not learning and being stagnant, that's never going to come back.
Right. So growth is number one priority. For any young professional, that's what you would say. Prioritize that before money, promotion, absolutely. Anything else.
Yes.
Okay. Now I want to ask you, what's the most significant lesson that you've learned throughout your career?
The most significant lesson that I've learned is the power of relationships and human connection. You know, so I was working with and Pantaloons forms a major part of, you know, 3 or 4 chapters in my book, because I spent a substantial amount of time working for Pantaloons. You know, I came in into Pantaloons, and this is one very, very interesting story in chapters, is that I came in out from outside Bengal, outside Calcutta. And generally, the two cultures of West Bengal and Tamil Nadu are not very accepting of people from outside. you know, and so I had to make my way with people, and I had to turn a very difficult situation of no growth, stagnancy, typical Cholbena culture of West Bengal, you know, what it is, into something which will run, which will be fast, which will grow. So the first over the first 6 months, the only thing which I did was establish relationships. You know, if you have, let's say, a group of 20 people, you have to be very smart to identify who will be which is the low-hanging fruit. With whom can you establish the first point of connection? Right. I mean, that's where your smartness comes in. Don't try and appeal and appease 20 people, right? Just find out four people that who are going to align to you the fastest, and they will have the maximum impact. Mm-hmm. So fast and the impact. I think the moment you have these four or five people working with you, being aligned with you, understanding and executing as to what you're thinking, you'll be able to turn around the situation very, very fast. So the most significant lesson, I coming back to your question, is that your relationship and how you connect with people, human connection, is of paramount importance. So connection, I'm talking about smartness, whom to connect with, that is very, very critical. And don't, if you want to establish a connection with everybody, possibly it's too much of an effort with too less a result. But if on the right people to connect with, and then you make an impact with them, slowly you will find that the other side, which was not very positive about you, they will change your opinion. And then you'll establish the human connection. That's how relationships, you know, develop. You know, one thing which I remember that, you know, there was a lady working in my team. And she was in visual merchandising department for about 17, 18 years. And this was when I was at the last leg of my stint. And I pushed her like hell to move from visual merchandising into operations, hardcore sales operations. It was against her wish, you know, but I sat on her head like crazy. And I knew that she inherent had a bit of a dislike towards me. But I just thought that, you know, it is going to be game changing for her. After a lot of cajoling, coaxing, she agreed that, okay, I will take this up. And you know, I convinced her that, you know, what you are doing, you've reached the maximum level of execution and growth. You can't grow beyond this. So you'll have to change. And, you know, a couple of months back, she messaged me, you know, that I have been awarded as the best head of sales in the entire country out of 10 people. So I think that gives you immense satisfaction that, you know, you just guided somebody who was not willing to go to a certain direction, but you thought that it was good for her with the understanding that she obviously has a little bit of a dislike towards you, but still, just for that benefit of the person who was leading her team. And you try to move that person towards that direction. And that's where, you know, human connection. The moment you are connected to people, you will, you know, try and work towards their benefits and towards their growth. And that is the most significant lesson of my life.
But after listening to that story, I do want to say, you wanted to guide someone in spite of knowing that that person disliked you a bit. Or at least, you know, like there was some dislike towards you. In spite of that, you pushed someone, you guided someone towards something which would have, like, benefited them. Like, you're not, there's no, like, you know, stakes for you in this. So I don't know whether there are, like, majority of people like you in this corporate world. I don't know. Like, I find it difficult as a corporate person to meet good people like you. I would say that itself is, you probably, like, won some sort of lottery to have good people like that. Because most of the time, I think, that even if you think that person is okay, y'all are friends, a lot of rug pulling happens more than people who are willing to go out of their way to guide you. So I love that story because I want to put that out there, you know, as an example of good people do exist in the corporate world. And if more people listen to your stories, like it's not always you scratch my back, I scratch your back. You know, sometimes it just helps pay it forward, even if you don't have anything to gain in it. By listening to someone else's success, it is giving you some sort of reward, perhaps from the universe. So I really want to like put the story out there for all the listeners out there. You know, it's not a dog eat dog world. You know, there are good people around. So try and find a connection where you identify this person. That's what I take away from your story, Priyaranjan. Thank you for sharing that. Okay, so now we switch tracks a bit and we want to go to the rapid fire segment. Okay, so I have a bunch of questions and you have to answer rapidly. That's the only requirement from your end. Okay, so let's start. The first question, the first thing that you do in the morning.
What are the plants in my house?
Oh, nice. What plants do you have in your house?
I have 500 plants in my house. So I have enough time and enough job every day to water something or the other.
Lovely. The book that you're reading right now.
I am reading my own book, Tales of Sales, and advise everybody else to read the same.
Nice. Okay. Your favorite business coach or leader, someone that you like, that you admire?
Favorite business coach? It's more, I think, from business and politics. Our Foreign Affairs Minister, Mr. Jaishankar. I think very, very crystal clear, clarity of mind, thought, execution, just very, very sorted.
And I think he's very articulate, which, yes. You know, yeah. So I really enjoy his interviews, watching them. And he's very articulate and he's very to the point. So I share the same opinion. What's the most ridiculous or absurd thing that happened to you while working in sales and marketing?
Most ridiculous. I have waited upon people who have told me that I'm going to meet you in 15 minutes, but I waited for them for 7-8 hours, you know, and still I've not been able to meet them. And I had still the guts and the gumption to go back the same day and wait for another 7 hours till that person relented that, you know, no, I'll have to meet him now. So I think that's the most ridiculous thing which has happened to me. But the kind of, you know, I had that belief that if I keep doing it, somehow I'll be able to meet him.
And I think that speaks volumes about your perseverance. Okay, that's great. If you could go back in time and give your younger self one piece of advice, what would it be?
One piece of advice would have been to just the way I articulated about being mature with a difficult peer group. I would have wished I would have been the same the first 6-7 years of my career, what I turned out to be in the last 10-12 years. So I would have done maybe more. I would have achieved maybe more. I would have been more productive more than anything else.
Right. What's the biggest misconception that people have about working in sales and marketing?
They think that sales and marketing is probably the same. You know, I keep telling people that I do teach at a lot of business schools. And my first question to people, I mean, second year students is that, can you define sales for me? And very few are actually able to articulate what sales is. And I give them a very simple definition. Sales is the act of providing a product or a service to somebody and getting a fair value in return for that.
Right.
It is, and if you are not extracting a fair value for a product or services which you are giving, it's called charity, it's not called sales. So sales is the complete loop that you have extended a product or given a product or a service to somebody and you have extracted a fair value in return so that it takes care of your financial and mental well-being. So that's sales, you know. And people don't understand this about sales. Sales people generally think that it is just pushing the product to somebody, pushing the service to somebody. But how do you complete the entire 360 circle? That is what sales is. And, you know, and again, I ask the same question about marketing, that, you know, what is marketing? What do you mean by marketing? A lot of people are not able to articulate very clearly what marketing is. Now, marketing is which pushes people towards the product or the good or product, good or service which you are putting out in the market. You know, this is what marketing is. And it has to push the people, the consumers, to your product, to your service. So that's sales and marketing, and they are chalk and cheese. They're very different. A lot of times people have this misconception, and that's why it's used interchangeably and together also. That sales and marketing. Actually, sales and marketing is very, very different. It's like physics and chemistry. You know, so you never talk about physics and chemistry together. You know, you maybe talk it as part of science together, but you talk physics and chemistry are two very different subjects. Similarly, sales and marketing are two very, very different subjects.
So now let me ask you a business question. So what do you say to those companies where they've sort of merged these two sort of roles together? Say they'll have a sales and marketing lead, sales and marketing manager. Do you think these roles should be separate?
For down the line, it should be separate, but obviously at some point it's going to converge at the top. Maybe it converges at a CEO level or a chief operating officer level. At some point, it's going to converge, which obviously at a business level, it has to converge. But when you are, and actually, you know, it makes a lot of sense that your sales and marketing functions should operate independently, because they've got a very different purpose to achieve.
Right.
You know, a sales purpose is very different, which I just explained. A marketing purpose is very different. If you merge both of them together at the front end, it becomes very, very difficult to achieve the objectives efficiently.
Right. Okay. What do you do when you're stressed?
You know, I just go for a walk or a run. And that's my me time. I think that's the best way I can reduce my stress levels. And recently, as I told you, so in my house, there are 500 plants. I have realized that the moment you start watering the plants, your stress level comes down. Somehow, you know, it just comes down. And this should be practiced by most people. If you don't have plants in the house, just take up a jug or somewhere and you just start watering somewhere. You know, you will just feel that you are feeling so much more better. Possibly it's the flow of water which is taking down your stress away.
Right. Oh, that's fantastic. Okay. What do you do on your time off?
I told you I've been working on the book for the last.
I was thinking that you're going to say water your plants, but then I was like, no, you're going to say something.
No. So I've been working on the book for the last 6 months. I've got a lot of hobbies. You know, I enjoy my fitness regime. I work on my fitness, on remaining fit. I've understood that the importance of if you're fitter, you look better, you feel more confident about yourself. With the same set of, you don't have to keep buying new clothes to make yourself look better and feel confident. That's what we generally, a lot of people do. You know, they keep buying newer stuff thinking that they'll feel more confident with it. Actually, it comes from inside. And if you're coming from inside, if you become fitter, you definitely feel a lot better about yourself. So that's what my favorite off-time activity is.
Your comfort food.
My comfort food is very simple. It is a Coke can with a Snickers chocolate. You know, this is a great combination, and which I learned from my stint with Mars chocolates. So we used to have a lot of these foreign visitors. So obviously in the afternoons when you are in the market, they would be very, and this is 2010 when McDonald's etc. was not as prevalent in India as it is now. So they were very edgy on, you know, consuming anything outside, because obviously from the possibility of catching any kind of infection. So I think their favorite, you know, comfort food at that point in time was, get me a Coke, get me a Snickers, and I'm done with the lunch. So I picked this up from these guests who would come into India on visits.
Nice. That's a combination I haven't heard. That's good. Snickers and Coke. Nice. If you could give every sales and marketing professional one book to read, what would it be? If you could give every sales and marketing professional one book to read, what would it be?
I think I'm not very, very prescriptive about reading books generally, because sales guys are not in the habit of reading too many books. But what I would prescribe to them is, you know, be very cognizant of the environment around you. A lot of times what happens is that people develop a tunnel vision into their jobs which they are in. And what results is that they keep doing the same stuff, same job in different companies for a very, very long period of time. And today's environment where, you know, the world is changing dramatically, you don't know when your skill is, whatever you've done will become obsolete very, very quickly. So it is very, very important to understand the environment. So more than reading, it is, I think, I place a lot of importance on observing. What is happening around you, be completely observant of the changes in the environment, because that will help you to build a very, very good and a sustainable career for a long term.
So now I find that answer very interesting. So now I need to ask you about the impact of AI in the possible future on sales, marketing. You know, how do you envision the future? Do you think it's going to make a difference, or do you think, no, it's only going to evolve the marketing and the sales profession as such, where you work in collaboration with perhaps an AI software?
See, artificial intelligence by definition can be very good at things which have already happened in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's what artificial intelligence is. And when we're talking about generative AI, the problem with generative AI is that it's going to give wrong answers with a lot of confidence because it doesn't have the historical understanding and knowledge. So from AI perspective and related to sales and marketing, what I understand is sales function is the at the bottommost layer where the interactions with consumers are going to change more towards e-commerce and more towards the web. I think the business structures are going to change. That if you had maybe a business which was 80%, it was in offline or physical mode, is probably going to change to 50-60% in offline mode, and rest it's going to be through the web, whether it could be through the company or marketplaces or e-commerce in whichever form and shape. Mm-hmm. I think AI will play a huge role there.
Mm-hmm.
So, which means that a lot of people who are in this industry will suddenly find that their requirements, their jobs have got shrunk. Because if there were 10 people doing a certain job, now suddenly only 4 or 5 are required. So that's why I said the last response was that you have to be observant about what's happening around you. So if you're not observant, you'll not be able to upgrade your skill set into something else, because you've been doing one thing for throughout your life and now suddenly you feel that now skill is obsolete. So AI is going to play a role at that point in time. AI is going to definitely play a role a lot in marketing, because, you know, you would, again, a lot of your campaign management, consumer engagements, consumer interactions are going to shift more towards a virtual mode rather than physical modes of whether it could be television or it could be outdoors or it could be newspapers. I think the mode of connecting with the consumer is changing. So I think that's where AI is going to play a huge role. But I think at the core, if you're talking about sales, it's finally going to be human interactions where people will be required, but in a different shape and a form.
Right. I completely agree with everything that you have just said. Being observant. I work in the field of HR, so there's a lot of massive changes happening in that field as well, where AI is going to, you know, replace a lot of roles. And I completely agree with you there. Okay. So lastly, what advice do you have for readers who are just starting out in sales and marketing and who are looking to advance their careers in these specific fields?
You know, the very, very short answer is that, you know, I have put down 20 years of experience in my 100 pages. Read that, you will find a lot of answers there. But adding to that, I think, you know, when people are asked that, great companies and great leaders are asked that, how do you build a great culture in an organization, right? So I think a lot of people have this response that treat others the way you yourself like to be treated, right? So I think, if you just keep that basic principle in mind always, that, you know, I am going to treat my team the way I would like to be treated, you know, a lot of things get sorted. The challenge is that we have differential parameters. We have got one is for me and other is for everybody else. I think that's where the challenge is.
Yeah.
If you can put up your hand up, who can put your hand up and say that this is where I goofed up? And, you know, this is where I feel that, you know, I should take the blame or my neck is on the line. No, people will, you will get everything into shape. The problem is you don't want your neck to be on the line any given point of time.
Yeah.
So if you play that kind of a role, you'll always have a challenge in manpower intensive departments, and sales is one of that you are going to have a lot of manpower, you're going to have a lot of human interactions. So just keep that basic principle in mind. Treat yourself, treat everybody else the way you yourself like to be treated, and a lot of things will fall into place after that.
Nice. Fantastic. So on that note, we'll end this wonderful episode. Priyan Ranjan, thank you so much for being here with me today. I really appreciate your time, and I hope all our listeners take some very valuable insights from this episode. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Manini. It was a pleasure speaking with you, and look forward to many, many such interactions in the future.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.